When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back. You are here with District Baseball as we do our first Nationals episode of the calendar year and of the 2024 season. We're going to be recapping the entire Nationals offseason, talk about all of the latest news that's been going on, project a little bit about what we expect in the 2024 season. We'll save a lot of our predictions and hot takes and whatnot for our season preview episode that we'll do just before the season gets underway. But as we stand right now, spring training is, I think they report this week, right? Yeah, pitchers and catchers report this week, which is kind of crazy to think about how quickly time is going. But we're going to touch on all of that today. But first, Trey, what's going on, my friend?
Nick, the Super Bowl concluded last night, which means it's officially baseball season, and I'm very excited for that. We're a little less excited to talk about the Nationals offseason, if I'm being honest, because they didn't do a whole lot.
No, they didn't.
But, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to have to play the games, and we're going to watch. So we can kind of speculate on how well they may do. And what other moves they might make before the season starts, because it's still only February.
Yeah.
And more could be coming, but right now this is what we got.
Right. And, you know, that's something we can touch on. We'll obviously start off with kind of recapping the offseason, all the moves or lack thereof that they've made. But as we stand the week of pitchers and catchers reporting, there's still cornerstone pieces out there, and I'm not going to dive too much into the Boris Korp negotiation strategy and waiting till the last minute. We saw it with guys like Bryce Harper and Manny Machado when they were free agents. They signed very late into the winter / spring, so I'm not necessarily surprised that not only Boris is holding out his clients, but also that the baseball owners are not paying up, because that's kind of the norm. The past couple of off seasons, especially the last two, have been outside of the norm in terms of teams actually spending and teams being aggressive in their spending. But that's not what we've gotten. You see a team like the Red Sox. I think they are the perfect example of everything that's wrong with baseball right now. The Red Sox, under no circumstances, should be like shedding payroll for the sake of shedding payroll. There's a huge problem within baseball right now. And again, this is a completely different topic. We're going to focus on the Nats right now, but all of this is just to say, if they really wanted to, there's players out there that could help, mainly guys like Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, to help one of, if not the worst rotation in baseball. And then there's a bat like Cody Bellinger that, you know, people will say, oh, you can't block your outfield prospects. Fine. He can also play first. He can also DH. Like, I don't care
He's got some versatility, so that's nice.
Yeah, I don't care if you know, like, relegate Joey Gallo to kind of more of a more platoon role. Like, that doesn't hurt my feelings, you know? So that's just to say the options are out there. It's not like it was just a weak free agent class or anything
like that. I'm pretty sure, has Hyunjin Ryu signed? I don't think
he has
so.
Not.
That's the guy I was kind of looking at as like a more realistic, like, innings eater type for this team, because I can't see them going after a guy like Snell or Montgomery. But Ryu, 1-year deal, That would be nice. Well, just saying.
The other one is Brandon Woodruff. He's still available too.
That's an interesting choice. And I know
that that's more of like a 2 year pact. Like you're signing him with the understanding that he's hurt this year. He might come back in like August. But still, that's a guy you take a flyer on every day of the week. I mean, I wrote an article. This was last year, obviously, before his injury and whatnot. Predicting the next big Nationals free agent signing. And I didn't have them signing anyone in this offseason. I didn't even have them signing Juan Soto next offseason, although I will be pushing that narrative very hard. But I had them signing Brandon Woodruff over Corbin Burns, because the Nationals have always been more inclined to spend money on pitching than position players. And I think in some circumstances that's a fair strategy. Like it's just safer in some respects to pay for pitching, because like it's pitching so volatile, injuries are at an all-time high rate, so it's like just paying for pitching and get a bona fide starter and high caliber player, like it just kind of makes sense. And then you just hope you develop a lot of position player prospects. And if you look at the Nationals current farm system, all of their top prospects are position players. Their one top pitching prospect is Cade Cavalli, who's recovering from Tommy John. So, you know, in theory, the perfect Nationals team as currently constructed, their position player prospects pan out, and then they supplement that with spending and free agency on the pitching staff. So, I would really like a Ryu or Woodruff or anyone. Just like you can do any, better than Trevor any Williams.
Starter right now.
You can do better.
The lack of pitching depth is bad. I mean, they were like the healthiest team in baseball last year, and you can't, I mean, that was great. That's a good thing, but you can't expect that to happen again. Mm-hmm. So like if you have one pitching injury, I mean, what do? I mean, bring in Adone again. That's your basically your
sacrificial lamb. Yon
that's
Adone.
Essentially. Yeah. I mean, they basically threw him to the
that's
wolves.
That's his role. Like I joke, but that's his role. He's listen, we don't want to use any of our good players. Not that they have many to begin with.
It's annoying because he has some stuff. Like I like see him, like he's got a good curveball, but like they haven't let him develop. They're just like, yep, you got to come up and be the fill-in guy.
It's insane to me. Was it the 20? Yeah. Cause he made his debut the final game of 2021. That makes sense. In 2022, yep. They left him up for so long. He went
They broke him. He should have never broke camp with the team. And it was the same thing. They didn't sign anybody. So it's like,
if you start 0-5 and you have a 6 ERA, send him down.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're ruining their pitching depth because they are ruining these young guys because they're bringing them up when they should just go sign a dude who's like kind of not good but can eat some innings. And that's like, they just haven't done that. So there's still guys out there that can do that, but there's far fewer than there were earlier in the offseason now. But
they missed the first wave, the second wave, and all of the subsequent waves after that. And you have like one final wave. Right. You have one final wave to make something happen. So we'll see if they jump in. Before we, you know, get into like our grades and recapping the actual transactions, I do want to throw this out there. Just for, you know, a brain teaser or, you know, fun experiment and wishful thinking and all that stuff. So the window, it's not necessarily a window, but you're able to put guys on the 60-day, I almost said the old word, the 60-day IL when pitchers and catchers report, like when spring training officially starts. I think that's like technically the new league year in some respect. So the Nats have three guys on the 40-man roster that could, and if you want to throw Stone Garrett in there, I don't know exactly where he's at in his recovery, but he's could be the fourth. They could clear 40-man spots. Steven Strasburg, obviously we don't know what's going on with him right now. He's still on the roster.
He will be on the IL.
I'm not going to go down that situation. We'll save that for another time, but he's definitely going on the 60-day IL. Cade Cavalli, if they want to be really conservative with his return, I don't think that's the worst idea in the world to put him on the 60-day IL. He's most likely not going to pitch in April and May anyways. So just put him on the IL, and you know, it just allows you more roster flexibility. Zach Brixey, who's a prospect, he's a reliever, has some potential, and will be, I think he's ready at some point this year. I'm not quite sure when, but with the prospect, same boat as Cavalli, they could just play it safe. You don't necessarily need him this year. So those are three. And then, like I said, Stone Garrett, I don't think Stone Garrett will make the 60 day IL. I think they'll just put him on the 10 day IL and just leave him there for a while. And unfortunately, we'll probably see like a guy like Alex Call, but they have options. And I only say that because they might be waiting to sign anyone else, like to a major league deal, until after they're able to move Cavalli, Strasburg, whoever else. Yeah,
their roster, the 40-man's full, right?
Isn't there right?
Yeah.
So if you sign someone right now, which obviously they're able to, you would have to make a subsequent move and DFA someone. And they might not want to do that because they already cleared. I think they had two spots already clear. They cut Dom Smith and DFA'd Pineda. And I think there's one other one to protect all their guys from the Rule 5 draft, guys like Mitchell Parker.
Jeter Downs DJ, as well.
Jeter Downs. They that DFA'd. Was the, and Pineda was for the Joey Gallo move. But I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, they were protecting the Rule 5 guys like DJ Hurst, Mitchell Parker, and them. So they might not want to make any other like moves and get rid of guys completely. Like guy like Pineda, they're pretty confident that he was going to clear waivers, which he did. But they might not feel that way about anyone else, which I think is silly, but you know, it could be their line of thinking. So we'll see when pitchers and catchers report, when the guys move to the 60 day IL, if that, you know, those couple of open spots, you know, kind of push them to add some guys that are still out there. The flip side of that is they could just leave those spots open if a guy impresses at spring training, like Jesse Winker, who we'll talk about in a little bit, like Juan Yepes, who we'll also talk about. So any of the minor league or the spring training invites, even if a guy like Dylan Cruz or James Wood, you know, have a really strong spring and force their way onto the roster, those guys aren't currently on the 40-man roster. So they could just be leaving those spots open. But it is a little bit of, you know, we can hope with
that's kind of like the last bastion of like, they have to be waiting because then they can move guys. I'm just like hoping that's like the super optimistic view. In reality, we might not see any move made afterwards, but hopefully. But yeah, no, I think we should, you already mentioned Gallo. We'll talk about the Nats offseason
signings. Take us down the list.
Yeah. Major league signings. Well, there's only three.
Count them on one hand.
Yeah. The first major league signing that the Nats made was Nick Senzel, who will be taking over as the third baseman at first. And then he's kind of more of a bounce back guy. So we'll see what happens. It kind of depends on how well he plays.
I mean, who isn't with the Nats?
That's free agent moves? We'll get there. Pretty much every guy is a bounce back guy. The guy that's closest to a guarantee, I would say, was their reliever signing, which was Dylan Floro. And this is a signing I really like. Because ERA wise, he wasn't the best last year of his career. I think he was like 4.3 ERA. But some of the underlying statistics suggest that he might have been unlucky. And he's been a very solid reliever throughout his career. So I think that's a good get. The bullpen definitely needed depth.
Yeah, last year was
more, but
the one outlier in like a good way. Like there's a good out. Well, it's the one like bad year in an otherwise solid career, whereas typically it's a lot of bad years and then one solid year, the Nats just go for that. Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's a little bit better.
Floro's got a large track record of solid pitching. So I do like, and even if he doesn't pitch amazing, other teams will probably be like, yeah, you know, he's had a good track record. Let's trade for him. So, you know, that's probably a decent move to get some trade value. And just to add some depth, because like we've mentioned before in some of our, you know, recaps from the season, the Nats basically had an A bullpen and a B bullpen, and it was more like an A bullpen and like a Z bullpen. Like we're going pretty deep, you know, it was pretty rough after the first couple guys came out, but, Floro will definitely help stabilize that. He's a veteran as well. And then Gallo obviously was the more recent major league signing. I think it makes sense to sign these guys for bounce backs. I just want to have one guy that's like good now would be nice, you know, like anyone. But there are some guys that they signed to minor league deals who have the chance to make some noise. Jesse Winker was today that they just signed him. I've seen a lot of optimism about this signing. I don't get it. He's one of the worst hitters in baseball the last two seasons, especially slugging, which he's going to be essentially a DH, if anything, because he can't really play the field that well. So I don't know. I don't really want my DH slugging under 300. But you never know. Maybe he can bounce back. We'll see. You're relying on a lot of these minor league guys to break camp and play well. And I don't really see it. The one that I could see is Juan Yepes. I do think that one has some merit as a minor league signing. He's still a young guy too. He's only 26. So that's important. He also hit a homer in the playoffs last year. Fun fact. So that happened. But yeah,
the Cardinals being in the playoffs seems like forever ago. They were so bad last year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I guess last year is now 2 years.
2 years ago.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying.
I know what you meant.
The last time they were in the playoffs, he hit a homer. Good for him.
Yes. Obviously not a murderer's row of free agent acquisitions. So Joey Gallo, if you want my extended thoughts, I'm going to shamelessly plug District on Deck here and you can go back and see my thoughts on Joey Gallo. I think I mentioned this briefly during one of our last episodes, like when the signing happened, like I called it basically. I'm not going to like, you know, victory lap quite as hard as I did with like Corey Seager or anything like that. But it just made sense. Like all Joey Gallo can do is hit home runs. All he can do is slug. He's a true three outcome player. He strikes out, he walks, he hits home runs. Like that's really it. Like he hits more home runs than singles. But that's just always who he has been. To his credit, he's very aware of his baseball profile. So he really worked on his defense and he's not like a slouch out there. He can play outfield, he can play first base, and I think he actually fits this team. That being said, there was better options out there at the time. Joey Gallo was signed, Rhys Hoskins was still available, obviously Cody Bellinger was still available and it still is available, so it's not like he was the best guy and the Nats got their guy, so to speak. But I don't think it's a bad signing. And if Joey Gallo can hit, this is a big if, and it's going to sound so funny if you don't know Joey Gallo's background. If Joey Gallo can hit like 240,
dude, that's like crazy.
He has such good value on the trade market because he's solid defender. He crushes right-handed pitching. He hits for power, left-handed power bat. He could easily be like a bench bat for a playoff team because his deal is so cheap. So like it's not the worst move in the world. It just sucks that this is basically the best move of the offseason.
We have to try and get excited about 30-year-old Joey Gallo. I mean, that's just the bummer of it all. Although, you know, he is streaky. So let's get on a hot streak in the first half and then you can do whatever you want after.
We just need a hot start. Like even if he cools off in like, you know, late June, we can spin that. Right. Give me a good April, good May.
Yeah, you'd be like, he still gets on base.
Right, exactly.
Because he does do that. We like him
because he gets on base. Dylan Floro, you touched on. I think that's a solid signing. We really needed to bridge the gap between the A bullpen and the B bullpen. And the thing is, like, I give them a lot of grief, but, like, the A bullpen was solid. We found ourselves in so many close games, which was good.
They had to throw so many times.
Especially early.
Yeah, but like Finnegan and Harvey were going
and,
three.
And my poor boy Mason Thompson.
Yeah, well, they basically ruined him.
They butchered my boy.
Yeah, for real. But yeah, I mean, you had guys going back to back to backs like all the time, and that's just frequently. You can't sustain that, especially when you have a guy like Hunter Harvey, who did miss some time, by the way, last year. It's just not a major injury, but he's had major injuries. You can't be throwing him three times in a row. So I'm like, that's why Floro is a good signing. And I wish that they honestly did more just to have just some extra depth. Although I will say, Robert Garcia, the lefty who came up last year, was very good, and now he should be around for the whole year. We'll see if he can continue to be solid. He was a multi-inning guy, which would help supplement innings for other guys. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm not like hugely hopeful that he's going to do that again, but you never know. He was good in his limited time last
and
year.
Jordan Weems came up about halfway through the season, about the same time Mason Thompson got hurt. He performed really well down the stretch and kind of emerged as like a dependable arm. You're getting Tanner Rainey back, and I know that's a big if, but if he's healthy, like he's proven to be a high leverage guy, and even though he's not a free agent acquisition, like you're still acquiring him in all, you know, for all intents and purposes for the bullpen. So like you have, you know, Weems, Rainey, Harvey, Finnegan as your kind of 7, 8, 9 guys. And then you can filter in guys like Floro, Robert Garcia, Mason Thompson for, you know, the inevitable 5-inning relief spots that you're going to need. And then obviously the 6th inning as well. So like in theory, like this is one of the it sounds crazy, it's one of the stronger bullpens that the Nationals have had entering a season in quite some time. And it's probably the area where they have the most depth, because we haven't even talked about guys like Jose A. Ferrer, who I'm not overly high on, but he's flashed in certain moments. And then they have some guys that will be in AAA or are in AAA or are returning, like Brixey, like I mentioned, who could, you know, step in if need be. So this feels like one of their deeper positions.
Yeah,
which
and
they signed
some minor league deals as well to help Richard Blyer. He has been a solid lefty in his career out of the bullpen. He's the older guy, so it might not work out, but he's there. And Luis Perdomo as well, that they signed.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, no, he's got a chance to make the team for sure coming out of spring. So we'll have to see with him. But I actually do. I like that signing as well. So
yeah, I mean Anthony Banda made the team out of camp last year. So
yeah, that's a good. You're kind of convincing me here, because that's a good point. Getting some guys healthy is helpful, and some minor league signings. Like that's kind of what they focused on for their minor league signings is pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that, but
yeah,
you're hoping that a lot of things go right out of spring training,
right? And
but
and
they should still be decent.
We'll touch on, you know, the Pecota projections here in a little bit. But Nick Senzel is kind of the last big one. All right. So
I've got absolutely zero hope.
Okay. So I would agree. There. I would agree. If it's not even history, it's just like when something's so obvious, right? Take Dom Smith, for example. It was very obvious that Dom Smith was just not a good baseball player. Like 2020 is such a fluke in so many respects, whether you had a good year or bad year. It was just like so fluky for so many people. So it was just very clear that Dom Smith was not a real starting caliber first baseman. But he had his moments. Like he had arguments to stay on the team. And I kind of feel that way with Senzel, where it's very clear that he's a bust. Number 2 overall pick, the Reds DFA'd him before like his contract was really up. They could have kept him for cheap, but they had infield depth and they didn't feel strongly enough about him as an outfielder or as a hitter to keep him around. That being said, it just feels like Senzel's that guy who's gonna do just enough to be like, "Huh, maybe." You know, like
hang around. That's
not the most analytical breakdown or like analysis or anything like that. But it's a gut feeling, like knowing this team, knowing how they've been operating. They're going to, you know, if Senzel hits a home run opening day, everyone's going to be like the "I told you so" kind of. That's like that's how it feels. So I don't know. I'm definitely not as high on this signing. There was like Gio Urshela is still out there. Gio Urshela was like having an 800 OPS until he got hurt. He like broke his hip or something.
I it's kind of weird. Do you think Senzel would have gotten a major league deal? besides from us. I mean, I'm just sitting here like, because the Nats signed him early. And I'm like,
and you know why? Because he's friends with Lane Thomas. You cannot convince me that that's not the reason.
I forgot you just about can't. That. Yeah, because they had to have the mass and think pieces after the signing, so they could. Yeah,
I mean, you're always going to get the mass and think pieces. They have some of the most shameless shill pushing people that write for them, and hey, you know that's their job. But like, for the people that take the mass and stuff at face value, it's just like, oh man,
yeah,
oh honey, like what are we doing? Yeah. But Senzel, I think he's just going to be. Added
probably slightly below average,
right?
Probably
below
will
average,
annoy us a lot.
He'll have his
other
moments.
People.
he'll probably play fine defense, but like it's so weird because yeah, again, number two overall pick. It's not like this was just some nobody, and he was heralded for his contact ability, and that's been like his weakest part of his game since he debuted a few years ago. Like it's just completely ass backwards with his game. So maybe. This is like one of the few times I'll say this. Maybe the Darnell Cole's approach will help a guy like Senzel at least a little bit to
maybe at least strike out less, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Like just, you know, just incrementally increase your production so that way you're not a complete liability anymore. So we'll see. But yeah, there were better options out there. There are, again, better options still out there. So. That is what it is. As far as Winker and Yepes, I kind of group them together. They're both lefty bats, could provide some power. I think it's one of them if there's even a spot.
Actually,
I think
Yepes is right-handed.
Oh, is he? I thought he was lefty for some reason. I might be confusing him. Anyway, I still group them together because Joey Gallo having the option to either play outfield or first base, it's like Yepes plays first base, Winker. I mean, you kind of mentioned it. He's really only a DH, but he like could play outfield if he played somewhere. So it's like you can put Gallo either spot. So it's like you're going to keep one of Yepes or Winker if either of them have a good spring. Or they could just assign them the AAA and they could go the Travis Blankenhorn route and call him up in August after you have like injuries and stuff. I think I'm much more interested in Yepes than I am
too.
Winker. But I'm also not one of these people on Twitter, and I'll always make fun of people on Twitter, but I don't necessarily make fun of them for this. Like if you're high on Yepes, that's fine. I'm just not one of those people. You know, if you're signing a minor league deal with the Nationals, yeah, that tells me 29 other teams wouldn't give you a major league deal and probably 25 other teams wouldn't give you a minor league deal. So
it's somewhat how it feels. Yeah.
it just is what it is. And maybe it's like a creative positioning for Yepes and his agent because they see the Nationals need help at first base. So that certainly could be a part of it. Whereas if you go to like Philly, like you're not playing over Bryce Harper. So what's the point?
Yeah.
Seems
so like they want a platoon somewhere, whether that be outfield, first base, or DH. They're going to platoon something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to because, like, we know that's Davey Martinez's strategy. He loves playing matchups. I
like platooning as well to an extent, but, you know,
right.
Normally...
To an extent, I think he does it too much. Like, still calling, granted, he's coming back from an injury, so we'll need him to, like, kind of reprove himself. But, like, Stone Garrett was fine against righties last year.
Yeah, he was, like, 120 WRC plus.
Yeah, he was, like, well more than fine. On this team as currently constructed, Stone Garrett's an everyday starter. Like he should not be riding
when,
a bench
when he is obviously healthy. Because probably
for sure.
won't be
for
ready
sure.
for opening day.
Yeah, I just mean like as currently constructed, assuming all goes well, Stone Garrett should be a starter.
Yeah.
Like even if it's at DH, he needs to be in the lineup. But also, he was more than fine defensively as well.
Yeah. No, I think you actually lose value if you take him out of the outfield. Because he was a very solid outfielder.
So
he's got speed that you wouldn't expect from him, a guy his size, but he does.
Right. So it's like injury aside, like they're kind of pigeonholing Stone Garrett, and I don't really understand it. But yeah, to your point, it does seem like they want a platoon. They've talked about their lefty bat. It seems like they kind of got it with Gallo, but they still don't have much lefty power in their roster. So if Winker, you know, has a good spring, or if Yepes displays power, like they'll take power wherever they can get it. So it kind of feels like it, one of those guys might find their way onto the roster. And then all the other guys, yeah, it's just depth. I don't really think we're going to need to talk about them, but as a whole, oh, I guess we can talk about Nassim Nunez real quick. The Rule 5 selection.
Yeah.
It's fine. I thought it was a reach, but it's the Rule 5 draft, which like you're not going to find crazy talent there. You'll find some diamonds in the rough. Like we got Thad Ward last year, who I was never really high on, but you know.
Yeah, well, the main thing is just
at least
keeping
shooting
them around. Yeah, keeping them right around so that you can keep them in your system, because I think Ward will probably be worked out as a starter in the minor leagues, but he couldn't go down there, obviously, to get that because he was a Rule 5 pick. So, yeah, Nunez will make the team, assuming they don't, like, they could also just straight up release him before the season if they feel like it. But seems like they want to keep him around, so he'll be on the bench on the major league roster.
And that's fine. He's basically filling the Michael Chavis role, which wasn't a huge role to begin with. Nunez will be backup to CJ Abrams. So he'll be filling the Michael Chavis Jeter Downs role, which again, like that's fine.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's even better than that, because he's mostly known for good defense. That's probably what he's going to do mostly.
And he's fast.
Yeah. He's going to pinch run and probably come in as a defensive replacement.
Right. So, but for the people who are saying he's going to challenge Luis Garcia, I just don't see it. He's not a good enough hitter.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. He's not and like, I'm not even sold on Luis Garcia. I used to be, but I'm very, very questionable on him now. But he's still not going to challenge Luis Garcia. I think the Nationals will end up needing a second baseman outside of the organization.
Trey Lipscomb has a better chance.
That's
than
true.
Nunez, honestly.
That's true. I keep forgetting that he can play second.
Do you think any of the prospects have a chance to break break camp, basically? Like, do you think James Wood, if he like went nuts in spring, would they call him up, or would they?
If he goes, and I'm going back a few years now, if he goes Chris Bryant in spring training, for those, just quick recap, Chris Bryant, when he was called or coming up with the Cubs, he hit like 13 home runs in spring.
It was something absurd.
And then they
still didn't call him up.
The Cubs didn't call him down because they're manipulating service time. But now there's incentives to calling people up early, like the Mariners did it with Julio Rodriguez. And I think they got like an extra draft pick or something because he won Rookie of the Year, just as an example. So if he goes nutty, if James Wood goes nutty in spring,
it would have to be nutty hand. Too, by the way.
Yeah, that might force their hand. But the Nationals, it's not particularly good depth, but they have a lot of outfield depth currently. There's a lot of bodies that they need to sort through to, like, I don't want them to call up a guy just to have him sit.
Me too. If he would have to play well enough to get a starting spot.
If Victor Robles' back injury creeps up, if, you know, Alex Call continues to really struggle, if Stone Garrett's not ready, and like all of a sudden we have like six outfielders that go down to three, then, you know, it definitely looks different. But I don't think Cruiser would break camp or like make the opening day roster. I think Brady House has a shot because Senzel has defensive versatility.
I was going to point out House because third base is just such an unknown.
Right.
But yeah, I'm also with you. Yeah, I'm also with you. I don't think that they break camp with the team either, but it would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly would be, but I'm not expecting it. And ironically, you brought up his name, and I kind of, again, shameless plug on District on Deck. Like I talked about how it's not the third baseman of the future. I can't remember the phrase I used, but like Trey Lipscomb might be this team's starting third baseman. And this was before the Senzel signing.
Yeah.
But it just feels like with Lipscomb, I like his game. I know some people are a little bit lower on him. The underlying numbers aren't necessarily kind to him, even though he went on like an absurd hot streak last year, like over the summer. He kind of feels like a guy that they'll be more willing to just like test it out.
Yeah, try it out. He plays multiple positions as well.
Right. So like if he struggles, they're not going to be too concerned about it. Whereas like if you call up Cruz or Wood and they really struggle, you're concerned immediately. Yeah. Like, did we ruin this guy? Whereas Trey Lipscomb, it's like, you know, it was kind of a shot in the dark to begin with, if he's ever going to turn out to be a major league quality player.
Yeah. Same with Darren Baker as well. They could do it with
he's
him.
Another guy that we could see. He's definitely a tried out guy because he's not getting much love at all from like prospect rankings and whatnot. So I don't think so, but I'm kind of cheating here. I pulled up kind of good timing. Jessica Camerato released an article today on MLB.com projecting the Nationals 2024 opening day roster. So I'll just go through quickly what she kind of projects. Catcher, she has KB Ruiz and Riley Adams. Riley Adams, we haven't really talked about. He broke his left hamate, which is a bone in your hand, back in September. So, like, timeline-wise, he should be okay. But with hamate injuries, it kind of affects your power.
His main selling point
last year, Riley Adams really shined last year. Neither of them were particularly good defensively, and that's the thing they'll need to improve on. Drew Melas was their third catcher, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for the Nationals to carry three catchers if Riley Adams, you know, is hurt or, you know, starts hitting and they want to put him
in the line, as get DH, him in the lineup more.
Right, and then you still need a backup catcher. So I think that's an option. I don't think they start that way, but I think that's an option. We'll see Drew Melas more, and that's probably why they DFA'd Pineda over anyone else first, because they knew Melas could be that kind of emergency catcher. Mm-hmm. First base, she has Joey Gallo, Joey Meneses. I think that's kind of self-explanatory. Second base, Luis Garcia Jr. Shortstop, CJ Abrams. Third base, Nick Senzel. And then outfielders, she has Joey Gallo again, but Victor Robles, Lane Thomas. So in this kind of lineup, she has Gallo in the outfield, Meneses at first. DH, Stone Garrett, Joey Gallo, Joey Meneses. Bench, Ildemar Vargas, Nassim Nunez, Jacob Young. So the one thing of note here is Jacob Young wins the fourth outfielder spot over Alex Call,
I hope that happens.
they have very similar games to begin with, but Young has at least shown, I mean, he
does everything slightly better.
He graduated three minor league levels last year.
Quick riser.
Or not even just levels, not even minor league levels. He made it all the way to the majors from high A in 1 year. So there's at least room for growth there. So I'm a big fan of Jacob Young. So I'm cool with cutting Alex Call. Starting pitchers, Patrick Corbin, Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Trevor Williams. Don't love Trevor Williams in the rotation, but I know he's going to be on the roster in some capacity. She mentions that Yoan Adon and Jackson Rutledge could begin the year in AAA and then be called up later in the year. And the relief pitchers, Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, Tanner Rainey, Dylan Floro, Jordan Weems, Robert Garcia, Jose A. Ferrer, and Mason Thompson. So she has Ferrer kind of winning.
Yeah, man, that's not a bad bullpen. That list is pretty solid.
Yeah, not bad at all.
I didn't really realize it, but yeah, I think that might be. I last year I thought the bullpen was going to be good though, and then they sucked at first, but then they came back and played very well at the end. So, I think that's pretty good projections. I mean, it just depends on how they want to do the DH, because we don't.
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest question.
Yeah, injuries and potential signings that could still happen.
And one thing I know no one really wants to talk about it because he's sort of a fan favorite at this point. In the laundry list of fan favorites that, you know, are like bare Mets minimum players. Right. Like Joey Meneses. Like he was good in 2022 in a short stint. He was good last year. Like he was fine.
He's clutch.
Right. that was his big thing, his runners in scoring position. But he's now entering age 32. He was never really highly regarded. He had that knee injury last year that he played through, to his credit. But it's like, you know, would you be shocked if we are in mid-June and we're staring at a Joey Meneses DFA?
No, like, not at all.
No, I wouldn't. I think it's
well. I would like him to. I want to believe that that injury story was really what was hampering him, and that it's really going to improve that he's healthy. That would be great. Unfortunately, he just doesn't have he has one full season under his belt, and the one full season was a 96 WRC plus at DH. That's not getting it done. So
right, and yeah. He only hit a he had a 722 OPS last year, which yeah, I mean WRC plus is you know similar kind of metrics to evaluate performance from that first base DH type, but like he was barely adequate. Yeah, and like yeah. If he takes another just small step and he's all of a sudden below a 700 OPS, it's like, why are we keeping this guy around? He's clearly not a part of the future. He would be trending into like Yadiel Hernandez territory where just like he's this why old guy that was kind of yeah kind of a good story, but why is he here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, I will say his lack of power was noticeable, and that could, if he was actually did have a knee injury, that could be a big impact on that. So, you know, if that's legit and he can be healthy and maybe he'll I you know, give me like a 115 120 WRC plus. I'll take that.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not necessarily rooting for it, but I'm just saying I could see it happening. Yeah. I think we're just like writing in Meneses as like just an everyday guy, and I don't think that's like a set in stone thing where we can just count on him to bounce back or do better or anything like that.
Yeah. I think he earned it for last year, but he's fine gotta for re-earn now. Got to re-earn that trust for sure.
He's fine for now, but it's thinner ice than I think people want to admit. So that's kind of the projected roster. Obviously spring could shake some things up, but Pecota, for those that don't know, Baseball Prospectus has, I don't remember what Pecota stands for, but it's basically like a what's the word I'm looking for? A simulation of the baseball season, and it's like a wide range of outcomes. So the median outcome is what they use. I think they simulate the baseball season 100 times or something like that. And obviously there's a bunch of advanced analytics that go in there, but they release the record projections for each team, and they have the Nationals at a 58-104 record. So they are not buying last year's performance. Obviously the Nationals won 71 games last year, but if you dive just slightly deeper, you see that the Nationals have a really good record in one run games that doesn't really seem sustainable.
Yeah.
Especially with no major improvements to their team. So it's like, if you want to ask, well, how did this team step back 13 games? You're probably looking at a more realistic outcome for what happened in those one run games in 2024. Could they, you know, be better? Sure, they could, but this is just kind of a ballpark estimation for how this team looks. And a lot of, you know, trusted outlets are saying this team's going to take kind of a big step back. And you know what? I tend to agree. I thought last year was a little bit fluky. While it was fun at times, you know, there wasn't that one thing where it was just like, wow, you know, we really like beat up on them, or wow, you know, this was just a well-played series. It was more just like, holy shit, we won. Like that's kind of, there were so many like of those.
You cannot
type of games.
Describe last season better than that. Holy shit, we won. I mean, I've been trying to figure it out for the whole off season, but that's like, I mean, it's kind of, that kind of is the feeling that you get.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what? It's kind of
right. So I remember the game, I think it was against the A's, the Jeter Downs walk off after they benched Abrams. Like Jeter Downs entered the game for CJ Abrams and it ended up hitting a walk off.
Yeah.
Like that was,
there was the like one against
what happened?
The Brewers, where we had like two infield singles and then an error and we won.
Yep. Yeah.
I was like, okay, like you can't count on that happening next year.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think Pecota's somewhat on the right track, because I feel like there's more ways for this team to backslide than there are for them to go forward. Mm-hmm. If this team improves, and obviously, like we've been saying, they could make another move, make some signings, something. But as currently constructed, you would need everybody to play as good or better than they played last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is asking a lot, because you didn't really sign anybody. And then you're asking basically Joey Gallo to be like his 2021 first half with the Rangers. And you're asking your pitchers to stay fully healthy again. I mean, it's just, there's too many things that can go wrong. And like there, I can see, cause we're saying, I mean, you don't want to say that they were 100% lucky last year, but there was some luck. Like, let's be real. There was some luck. And you know, you can't expect a team to hit that well in the eighth and ninth innings like the Nats did last year. They hit so much better in the late innings. It was unbelievable. The middle innings were basically a dead zone for this team, and you don't want to live like that. So I get that. I wouldn't go down below 60 personally, but like, I can understand where they're coming from there.
This is very early, and I haven't done a super deep dive into my, you know, thoughts on the team, but I'm thinking low 60s. Last year I had them at 55. I'll admit I was very low on them, and obviously they won 71 games. This year I'm slightly higher on them, but yeah, I'm low 60s still. Yeah, I think
mine was like 64 last year, and I would say I was optimistic with
64. That's an optimistic end of things for sure.
Yeah, and they did overperform that, and that's why this offseason I felt was more important than people were making it out to be. Because when your team overperforms and shows you that they want to win, you're supposed to help them out. Like, that's kind of how it's supposed to work, but that's not how it is working here. So, yeah, I think I would probably keep my projection around the same as it was last year, because this is a very similar team to how they were at the beginning of the season last year. You know, you got bounce back candidates as your free agents, and you got your young guys that you hope will play well, and that's pretty much what you got.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough to see this team going past 71 wins, that's for sure.
There's no way they're taking another step.
I can't. Yeah, I mean, like, if they could maybe finish with the same record as currently constructed,
maybe
that's like, and that's, I think, what
that's,
I
on
feel
the high,
like,
end.
I feel like that's a ceiling type of deal. Mm-hmm. So it's,
for sure,
it's tough. Unless you get some guy, like, you kind of have to hope that, like, when James Wood and Dylan Cruz and Brady House all come up, that they all just crush. It could happen.
Well, that's what the Nationals are basing their entire rebuild off of. Like, if those, again, separate conversation, but like, if those guys don't hit, if two of those guys don't hit, the Nats are screwed. Like, they don't have any farm system, like legitimate farm system depth. The Padres, we know the haul that the Nats got for Juan Soto from the Padres, and the Padres 2 years later have a higher ranked farm system than the Nationals without all of the top picks.
And Robert Hassel, who we haven't even discussed yet, was the number one prospect in that deal technically.
Yeah.
At the time.
And he's regressed. Elijah Green's
been horrible last year.
Horrible. Yeah, like, a lot of the guys they were counting on have been bad, quite frankly. It's iffy. But while we're on the subject of projections, we'll kind of wrap up this conversation with the FanGraph projections for the National starting lineup just real quick. So CJ Abrams, obviously the bright spot of last year, they have him, I will say, it's a little bit under where I would have him. They have him at 17 home runs, 36 stolen bases, 258 average, and a 730 OPS. It's a little bit low for me. I think the home runs is about right, but I think the stolen bases will be way up. I think he's going to get the green light and be super aggressive on the base paths.
He should. The Nats were so much better when he was running. So
yeah, the average, if he hits 258, I'm cool with that. And a 730 OPS sounds about right, because while he has power, that's not necessarily his game. I would hope that the on-base percentage gets higher than 310, but that sounds about right. Lane Thomas, they have 23 home runs, 252 average, and a 750 OPS. Sounds about right. KB Ruiz, 17 home runs, 270 batting average, and a 760 OPS.
Nice.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
That's actually pretty good for FanGraphs. FanGraphs is generally fairly conservative, and that's 760
it's
for a catcher who's coming off of a, I mean, he was all right.
He finished strong.
He definitely did.
With Ruiz in particular, like, I would trade. I'll take the offensive stuff from last year if he just improves defensively.
What did they do? What
Henry
did they
Blanco,
do
man.
To him, man?
Henry Blanco.
He was like perfectly adequate.
Yeah, and now like the deal's not an albatross, thankfully, but yeah, it's what we thought we were signing up for.
Yeah, but he can provide some offense, and that's fine.
Yeah. Joey Meneses, 18 home runs, 263 with a slightly above 730 OPS. Again, sounds about right, but it would not shock me if those home run numbers were lower. Joey Gallo with the funny stat line, 23 home runs, 191 average, and a 723 OPS.
What's his on base?
What is it? 313.
That's 313. So he's going to have like a 17% walk rate or something crazy.
Yeah, something like that. Stone Garrett, they are not very high on, and maybe the injury plays a part into this. They have him 16 home runs, which would be fine, but 237 average, and then a 710 OPS. Luis Garcia, 12 home runs, 273 average, and a 738 OPS. Nick Senzel, 8 home runs. Whoa, getting real spicy there. 232 average and like a OPS below 700. And then Victor Robles, 8 home runs, which if Victor Robles hits 8 home runs this year, I will like streak through Nats Park. There's no shot in hell that's happening. 245 average and a 693 OPS. So yeah, they're not overly bullish on the Nats, but the thing that got me is the rotation. And you mentioned it, like Fangraphs is usually pretty conservative, so they're not the most, you know, optimistic or friendly. All right, we'll start from the bottom. They have Trevor Williams at a 517 ERA.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that's actually optimistic.
Maybe.
Patrick Corbin at a 516 ERA. It sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Jake Irvin at a 492. I think that's fine. I think Jake Irvin is just a fifth starter. He's going to have some good games. He's going to have some bad games. He's not going to be anyone that like makes my list or is like my 13th reason or anything like that. Mackenzie Gore, they have a 4.21 ERA. Kind of sounds about right. A little bit of a volatility.
Honestly, with Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And what do you think Josiah Gray's is?
It's probably worse than I want it to be.
It definitely is.
I'm going to go like 5.
Close. 4.86. Which
yeah. It's unfortunately I get it.
I get it. And that's what sucks. But like if you know Josiah's ERA jumps a full run from 23 to 24, that would just hurt so badly. Yeah. So badly.
Gotta get the walks under control.
Yeah, they have him at 77 walks in 2024, which I'm sure contributes to inflated ERA.
That's probably high.
They also have Kyle Finnegan with a 4.07 ERA, which I thought was funny.
I mean, relievers, you never know. I mean, he was good last year. He's actually been somewhat consistent for the past 2 years, somewhat.
Yeah. So all of this is just to say, you know, Fangraphs, Baseball Prospectus, like anywhere you look, not the most bullish on the Nationals, and it's kind of hard to argue. Could they be just as good and have a fine season? Sure. I just don't think it's likely.
I think like I said earlier, it's just like there's more ways for the backslide for them to come back down to earth than there are for them to progress, I feel like.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you need a lot of things to go right if you want to get back to 70 plus.
Yeah. For sure. All right, let's pause here, get a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back on the other side.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, we are back in switching gears. We are talking about the real fun stuff now. Trey, the Nationals unveiled some new threads a couple weeks ago, and they will be displaying one new alternate jersey, and they redid their road grays. Obviously, this is just an audio-only episode, so if you want to go check those out, Google, Twitter, you know, I'm pretty sure we retweeted them, or you can find them on the Nationals' Twitter as well. The road grays, they're fine. Like road grays aren't meant to be like the staple in a team's, you know, uniform arsenal. I didn't think they needed to be changed, but
yeah, I mean,
you know, they're fine. And I think a lot of it's Nike just switching things up to sell more merch. And we'll talk about the City Connects here in a minute. The real talk of the town was the pullovers, which is kind of new to baseball. Obviously, with baseball uniforms, you typically get the button downs. We've seen some variations. We saw the Reds display a sleeveless jersey. And if you go back, you know, to the early 2000s, they had the Turn Back the Time jerseys or whatever they the hell they were called. And, you know, so you've seen, you know, unique jerseys. The Nationals pullovers, they're not bad. And as an alternate, it's fine.
Like, yeah, that's what I was going to say. If they were the main uni, I would maybe right. have an issue. But just as an alternate, kind of cool.
Yeah. So, and that was like the real thing. Because this news kind of came out of nowhere, and everyone thought that they were getting rid of the script jerseys. And that was like, no. We finally have like really clean looking jerseys, especially the navy ones. I love the white ones. I would love a red one.
I love the Nats home unis right now.
Yeah, I think they are so clean. So I was really concerned and, you know, voiced my displeasure during the initial drop. But then it came out that they were just replacing the red curly W uniforms, which I think it's kind of a mistake not to have a red jersey, even though I don't love red as a color. You're the Nationals. You play in the nation's capital. Red is like kind of your primary color. Just kind of seems silly not to have a red alternate, but they're trying something new. That's fine. I like, you know, at least experimenting and not just doing the same thing for the sake of being traditionalist. The thing with the pullovers, though, is you get three different logos on them. You get the W, block W with the Capitol building behind it as the chest logo, the most prominent one. You get the interlocking DC on the sleeve, which I love the interlocking DC. They need to bring it back.
Yeah, I was going to say,
get that on the sleeve.
Would they need a hat with the interlocking DC?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And then you're going to get the curly W with the hat. Or at least, I don't think it's on the jersey. I think they're pairing the hat with it. But that's just to say they're three different logos with that uniform combination, which kind of seems like you're going through a midlife identity crisis or something like that. But do you feel like the Nats are phasing out the curly W?
Phasing out might not be the word for it, because I feel like that's always going to be a part of the franchise. It's been a part of the franchise since they were the Senators back in '40s and before. So there's parts that I think that they want to distance themselves from it slightly because of maybe all the Walgreens jokes, honestly.
So I have I'm not saying like high ranking officials, but like I have connections to people who work for the Nats, and it's generally pretty well known within that, not necessarily front office like Rizzo and them, but like the front office in terms of like the behind the scenes operations with the Nats, that the Walgreens jokes have kind of run their course, but they're pretty tired of them.
I mean the logos do look similar, but to be honest, the curly W Washington baseball logo was around first, so
it was, that's why they won that lawsuit. Yeah. Back in like 2006 or seven or whatever it was.
So I feel like they're always going to have some kind of jersey or hat or something with a curly W, regardless of if they want to get away from it, just because it's tradition. But I'm not a huge fan of the Capitol building block W logo. It's not my favorite.
I despise it.
I would much rather go with the interlocking DC. And that would be my choice, especially for a hat logo. It looks so great on a hat. Definitely, I would like to see interlocking DC come back as some form, which they have it on the that jersey. But yeah, it's also paired with two other logos, which is weird.
So I actually misspoke. The curly W won't be featured with the pullover, but the curly W is on the sleeve on the road unis. So when they were displayed together, you had three different logos within the quote unquote new jerseys.
Yeah.
So that's where that confusion came from. And as far as I know, they are still featuring the atrocity that is that tricolor hat with the Capitol building W.
That's my favorite.
The worst hat in baseball. But along those same lines, which you just mentioned, like the Senators and whatnot, the Nationals did release two new hats, and they won't be worn in the regular season. One is a spring training hat, which we'll see here next week or whenever they start playing games. And then the other one is kind of like a batting practice hat. But these two, while normally wouldn't be like major news, they are news in the fact that the spring training hat features just the Block W, no Capitol building behind it. It's a navy hat with kind of a white and red Block W on the front. It looks really cool. It's simple, but it's clean. It's effective. It's one of the better spring training hats they've had in recent years. And someone pointed out that it's been 100 years since the Senators World Series win back in 1924. So it's kind of an homage to that. I think it looks good.
Yeah.
And then the batting practice hat is a red dome with the navy brim, and it actually features the interlocking DC, which is the first time they've really acknowledged it since they switched from the interlocking DC to the curly W back in like 2009 or 8, whenever that was. But now we've gotten the interlocking DC both on the sleeve patch of the pullover and as a batting practice hat. So it kind of feels like that might be making a comeback, which I am all for. But yeah, both hats I am a big fan of. The pullovers, fine. I'm cool with something different. I don't think they look good as a jersey, but they're fine. And then the road grays are fine.
Yeah, the roads are whatever. I don't really, like you said, those are never the big deal.
Yeah. What was a big deal to a lot of fans is around the same time that these threads dropped, it was announced. So I think there was a little bit of misunderstanding. People thought the Nationals were phasing out the City Connects when in reality, that's a Nike controlled thing. And the City Connects were only meant to be around for 3 years and then cycled out. So that way Nike could invent new uniforms that could be sold and push merch. So this will be the last year that the Nats wear their Cherry Blossom City Connect jerseys, which are great. And obviously that includes the hats too. I assume they're still wearing them for Friday and Saturday home games. That's what they did last year, but this will be the last year that they feature them. And then that in turn opens up a slot for a new uniform next year as well. So just something to keep an eye on. They might bring back the red curly W alternate jerseys. They might just be out of circulation for 1 year and then bring them back next year. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, it definitely hurts to see the City Connect jerseys go or have their one final hurrah, but that's a Nike thing. That's not the Nationals just making a bad decision. I get why you would think that the Nationals would make a bad decision, but that's a Nike thing.
Yeah, that's normally the case. But Nike just they're doing the same thing in basketball where they're just like, we have to make different jerseys so we make more money. I'm like, can we not? You're Nike. How much more money do you freaking need?
Yep. Well, money talks. Many talks, so we'll see what the Nationals decide to do, but you can expect some different looks from your Nats this year. And then the final thing we wanted to touch on, which was obviously kind of the biggest news of the Nationals offseason, which honestly wasn't even their news. It just kind of impacted them. For those that have been living under a rock, or maybe you just forgot with, you know, all the hoopla going on with Super Bowl and, you know, life and whatnot, the Baltimore Orioles were sold. The Angelos family, notorious for being kind of sleazeballs. And
screw you, Peter. Right, or John, excuse me.
Yeah, not
they both the, suck, but really both, John. John's both, worse.
But yeah, John. notorious for being bad owners, obviously not spending. They were sold. And this is news in and of itself, but also for the way it unfolded. We got rumblings a couple months ago that a group led by David Rubenstein, who Carlyle Group, which if you're, you know, Northern Virginia, you should be familiar with that. Rubenstein was also in the Leonsis group that submitted a bid to buy the Nationals, which is of note.
Yeah, he was.
People forgot that. But Rubenstein is, I think, from Baltimore, just from Maryland, grew up an Orioles fan. So he has like personal connections to that. So there's that, but also the way it unfolded, it was like an overnight thing. It was just like, hey, we heard rumblings, and all of a sudden they were sold.
Yep.
Like there was no listing the team up for auction, you know, creating a bidding war. There was none of that. It was just cut and dry, sold for $1.7 billion. which is less than the Nationals' asking price of what I think the Mets sold for 2.4, and then
they
the
Nats like
were looking
more
for
that,
more than that,
which is
but it's also less than what the Nationals were offered by the Leontes group, which was $2 billion. And there was I obviously we don't know what happened behind the scenes, but there was like no public counter offer. It was, hey, you want to take $1.7 billion? Sure, done deal. And that was that.
Yep.
So it really, and I don't know if we're going to be able to touch on it all in this episode because we kind of went along with the offseason stuff, but it's just kind of baffling to see the Orioles, the Angelos family, just sell the team without much pushback and reach a kind of, you know, amicable deal to sell the team. And then there's the Lerner family who announced 2 years ago, basically at this point, that they were selling a team with no real news to, you know, show for it in the past 2 years. And I get Ted Lerner died and whatnot, and that might have delayed things. But Mark and the family said they were still intent on selling despite the passing of Ted Lerner. So I don't really give them a pass for that. So that's the first part of it. And then obviously there's the whole Masson thing, that we can dive into, but what are your thoughts on the Orioles situation and kind of how it paints the picture for the Nats ownership?
Well, I think what it showed is that if an owner really wants to sell, they can at any point. So especially in a league where franchise values continue to go up, and especially went up last year when MLB had one of their best seasons in the decade in terms of viewership. So there's whatever smoke screen they're trying to use about like, oh, we didn't get the right offer. It's like, if you really wanted to, you could sell. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's always the issue is that they never say what they mean. And that's always what that gets me. It's just like, just, you know, if you're going to just tell me the truth, that's all I ask. But they won't do that. It was definitely interesting how it happened, because it was seriously like overnight. I mean, it was quick. And it actually makes a lot of sense for the new group to go after the Orioles, because they just signed a lease for like 15 years to stay there. Yeah. At Camden. So the Rubenstein group has that extra fallback, I suppose, that they will have 15 years.
They also just have a really young, exciting nucleus. Where the Nats don't.
Yeah. And they've already shown willingness to make moves as they traded for Corbin Burnes literally instantly.
The next day.
Mean, it was so quick. And we both agree that they could potentially look to extend him. Mm-hmm. But this just brings in extensions for those other young guys, because the Angelos family wasn't going to pay him. They said that they pretty much stated
bluntly.
That directly, mm-hmm. which is so crazy to ever say as a sports owner. But now all those guys are all of a sudden in play, because you got a totally new ownership group who, I mean, it would be very difficult to do less than John Angelos did. So they're probably looking like they're going to do more than him. And that makes the Orioles very scary, first of all, as a team. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, like you said, this brings in the Masson money thing, which has been an ongoing battle for the Nats and the Orioles for as long as the team has been in DC, basically. And there's at least now a path to where the Nats get their all their money. They've been paid some of it, so they've actually been winning those cases. But they're still owed, I believe, like $100 million in TV revenue.
Yeah, it's about that. And I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to say one thing. Or, you know, if you've been following the show for a while, and you know, previously with Half Street High Heat, you know, Matt Weirich, who was formerly of NBC Sports Washington and then covered the Caps for a year, and now is actually with the Baltimore Sun, for those that don't know. So his first week at the job, Orioles got sold, Corbin Burnes traded, and you know, he's just living life as an Orioles reporter.
Shout
so
out Matt, bro.
Yeah, congrats to Matt. But he actually broke the news, which is, you know, it feels like, you know, your homie made it out the hood or something. but Matt Weirich reported that the MLB could actually require the Orioles to concede their share of the Nationals television rights as part of the pending sale. It's not like a lock, but as you mentioned, Trey, like there is a path to where we could finally get our TV rights back. Right.
We don't have to hear about it anymore. I mean, it's been seriously,
you know, for anyone who's, you know, yelling at their radio or whatever that, you know, the Nationals didn't get a fair offer because they don't own their TV rights. Ted Leonsis offered $2 billion as is for the, for the team. So I really don't want to hear it. Yes,
totally cool with him not buying it, by the way. We should also point that out.
Right. That's another thing. And I'm not even a huge Ted Leonsis fan, but it just goes to your point. If the Learners really wanted to sell, they would have.
Yeah.
And this just feels like they completely misread the market. They saw what the Mets went for and they thought they could do better, which they couldn't. So yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but as you mentioned, there is a path forward for the Nats to get their TV rights back.
Yeah. Which they're really, hasn't been mean other than the first they got paid for like 05 to 2010 I think, and that was like the first step towards anything happening.
Well,
really,
they got paid for it was later than that. It was like 13 to 17 or something like that.
Yeah, they got and a chunk.
Yeah, they're still owed 17 to 2021 I think is the next block of like 4 to 5 years that they're owed for, and then it should be square.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is billionaire money, so who cares? But that 19 season is in amongst that group, so that's probably a decent chunk of revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see.
I'm happy for O's fans. I'm happy
for sure
that I can watch the Orioles and not hate them anymore, because I just like couldn't root for them with Johnny, and like all these owners are scummy, but like. He was almost on his own level. Him and John Fisher down there just hanging out in hell. Whenever they die at age like 130, because those guys live forever.
But, yeah,
yeah.
So we'll see. I'll just kind of tie a bow on it with this. Do you think the Nationals are sold?
No.
I'm starting to think that too.
I'm sorry. I'm honestly not anticipating a sale. But to be fair, I didn't think the Orioles were going to go, and that just kind of happened.
True.
So you never
know.
That's
true. But that kind of feels like the outlier, like the exception, not the new standard or anything like that.
Yeah. No,
especially if the Learners already tried to beat the Mets record, it feels like it would take a very large pill being swallowed for them to just sell out of nowhere.
It seems like I think it goes to show you how much franchises are actually worth, because. They were
Nats are valued at $2 billion.
I know, like that's not enough. Like that's like worth keeping, obviously. They'd make more money keeping it at that point, like in terms of, or like they wouldn't, if they wouldn't sell as for as much as the Mets, which they obviously were never going to. I don't really know who thought that was
realistic
in play, but
yeah. So we'll see. I don't think they're sold either. Now it's just a matter of will the ownership reinvest in the team, which I hope, but because they have done it before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like when the Learners are actually invested in the team, they're one of the better ownership groups. Like I will admit that.
Yeah.
They have their moments.
They just pick and choose when.
Right. They pick and choose, which is annoying, but grand scheme of things, they have been one of the better ownership groups when they're invested, which is how I know in the past, like 3 to 4 years, they haven't been invested because it's been a completely different ownership group.
Mm-hmm.
Like after 2019, they were checked out, and I get, you know, the COVID season and their money in real estate and all that stuff. They're still billionaires. They still have a shitload of money.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to feel bad for a billionaire. but yeah, it's just a matter of will they reinvest in the team. And as far as the TV rights go, there is a little bit of an interesting layer to it. So Rob Manfred recently did a press conference, and for those that don't know, Bally Sports, they're owned by the Diamond something group. They filed for bankruptcy. Amazon actually bought the rights. So those 14 teams that are broadcast on Bally Sports throughout the country, they're actually going to have their games on Amazon Prime.
No blackouts.
with no blackouts. Well,
that's the big, that's the biggest thing.
Huge. It's the first step to getting, you know, no blackouts in market games available. And it's kind of like a 1 year trial run and we'll see how it goes. But Rob Manfred expressed the desire to have half the league on some sort of streaming platform with in-market options by, I think he said 2025, maybe 2026.
It's still not perfect, but that is something. That sure. is some kind of step forward for baseball. Yeah,
and teams like the Yankees who have the YES Network, like that's, and even the Orioles with Mass, and like it's, those are going to be, you know, status quo. But if you do the math, there's 14 Bally Sports teams that are on Prime. If you do half the league, 30 minus or divided by 2 is 15. So they just need to add one more team. That one team, in theory, could be the Nationals, who are trying to get their TV rights back. And then if they're not with Masson anymore, they're going to be looking for a home. Prime could just scoop them up. That's 15 of the 30, and they could be lumped in. A lot of ifs.
Yeah,
but
and then in market,
that path, you can watch. That path is now exists because Prime's, it's not like, oh, Prime could do this, but they hadn't yet. Prime is now actively streaming baseball games in market. So if the Nats are without a home and everything goes well with Prime this year, it kind of makes logical sense for Prime to just add the Nats. What's, you have 14 teams already. What's one more?
Yeah, I would anticipate that will go well. So
I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, the whole issue with MLB TV is that you can't watch your own games. So nobody in their own market is going to buy it.
They already do live sports with Thursday Night Football. So yeah, obviously they have the capability of it. The Apple TV broadcasts seemingly have gone well. I haven't watched a ton of them.
They're like good and bad. I mean, it's like,
as far as like the production, like the video is clear. The video is the best selling point
that they have is
right. I get the broadcasters are very hit or miss, but like as far as the ability to stream the game, like it goes well. Mm-hmm. So there's a path. It's just, you know, a lot of ifs, which there always are with the Nationals. So yeah, that really kind of touches on everything we wanted to talk about. I think in a couple weeks, maybe towards the end of the month, early March, we might do another audio only podcast where we kind of talk about the position groups for the Nationals once we get a better idea of how spring training's unfolding, injury updates for guys like Riley Adams, Stone Garrett, who currently factor into the team but might not if their recoveries aren't going as scheduled. That might open the door for other guys to step in and earn a spot.
We should be getting a lot more info about, you know, injuries and kind of how the roster will be shaping, you know, within the next couple of weeks, because they do, like we said earlier, they report this week.
Yeah. So, and who knows, Steven Strasburg might retire. Don't know.
Yeah, could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to, they just kind of won't let him.
Oh man, lots going on with this team, but, yeah, I'm glad we got the chance to kind of talk about it all at once. This is kind of what we've been waiting for. We certainly didn't expect to have to wait this long to be able to talk about Nats for a full episode, but here we are. And we'll as we obviously approach the start of the regular season, we're going to be doing Nationals episodes more frequently, but we still will be having our kind of district baseball episodes as well, and covering the whole MLB as well. So you're looking at, you know, maybe two shorter episodes a week, but two episodes a week nevertheless. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. And most will be on YouTube. This was just, we knew we were going to have a lot to talk about. It was going to be a lengthy discussion. We wanted to be able to go on tangents, so we kept this one audio only, but be sure to check us out on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe at District Baseball. Follow us on TikTok at District Baseball and on Twitter at District BSB. Trey, you got anything before we head out, my friend?
Let's go baseball.
Let's go baseball, man.
Wow. Been a while, huh? It doesn't feel good to say it. It feels good to say it. Super Bowl's over. It's baseball season.
Yep. So spring training right around the corner. And before we know it, opening day will be upon us. We have this episode's coming out on Thursday. So be sure to check out the top third baseman in baseball episode that released this week. That one's up on YouTube. And next week we'll be doing the top 15 outfielders in baseball, which will be a good one as we continue on with ranking season. And before we know it, we're going to get into the division previews, which is always a fun time. We get to talk about all of the different moves around baseball and break down how we think the divisions will play out in 2024. So a lot of good stuff right around the corner. Best time of the year. Can't wait to dive into it all. So be sure you're subscribed and following us in all the appropriate places. And we appreciate listening. We couldn't do this without you. So we will catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.